Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome back, Justin. You are back from Singapore and presumably over the jet lag.
It took me about a week, and I'm finally over it, I think.
Was it worse than Japan?
Well, this is the first time I'd come back from Asia to the West Coast, so I can't really tell. Actually, no, I think it was not quite as bad, because I remember whenever I come back from Japan, it clubs me in the knees around 5 o'clock, and this time I was lasting till almost 8.
Wow, 8 o'clock.
Right, living on the edge.
Yeah, so we both watched the same show. We finally got around to Baccano. Is it Baccano or Baccano?
It's pronounced like an Italian word, so I think it's Baccano.
Baccano, okay. What did you think?
I thought it was off to a slow start, but I really liked it in the end, and it got really, really fun.
Yeah, it took me 3 episodes, and by the middle of the 3rd episode, I was like, why do people like this? Because it's really irresponsibly written, it's super confusing, they're going out of their way to make it, like, you know, there's too many characters.
Yeah, the story is jumping around like crazy.
Yeah, there's too many characters. And then episode 4, all of a sudden I started loving it. I think it was the introduction of the villain, or the lad,
right?
Whatever. I was like, oh, this shit is real. Like, this is a good show.
Yeah,
and then I watched the next 5 or 6 episodes.
It gets batshit insane.
Yeah, it gets really good. Like, I was sitting there thinking, like, this is, like, the best show I've seen in a really long time. I'm sorry I'm so late to the party on it. But that, it literally reminds me why I like anime. Like, that's one of those shows where you rekindle, you know, your love affair with Japanese cartoons.
I watched the first episode when the fan subs came out, and it didn't do a thing for me.
Because it's a mess. The first two episodes are a fucking mess.
The first episode especially, because they have that bookend thing with the little girl trying to piece together the story, and it doesn't work at all.
No, it doesn't.
It's completely not engaging, and she's just kind of annoying and weird.
Yeah, and it sucks too, because
she reminds me a little of Pinocchio from Blackjack.
Oh, God. Yeah. I hate the it gets better, but it only takes 2.5-3 episodes for this to get to get legitimately really good.
And it's a steep ramp up, even from the beginning, from like the first half of the first episode to the second half of the first episode, it gets better.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, I mean, I was a little less patient with it, I think, than you were initially. Because initially I was just like, what?
Right. Well, heavily hyped by the time you came along as well.
That's true, and it's like, you know, they're not doing a good job bringing me into this right away.
Right.
Special mention should be made of the dub, which is really good.
Yeah, and you didn't like it at first.
No, I still have problems with it. I still think there are voices that are, quite frankly, bad. Some of the accents are shitty. I mean, it's very fake sounding.
The story takes place in you know, New York in the 20s, you know, during the Prohibition era.
The 30s.
30, well, yeah, whatever that is. 1931, I think they said.
It bounces from 30 to 32.
Yeah. Right. And as a result, a lot of the characters have these almost Bugs Bunny-ish New York accents.
Yeah, they're intentionally sounding like cartoon mobsters, which is fine.
Right. They are, in fact, cartoon mobsters.
But some of them are bad cartoon mobster voices, like very amateurish, like someone's trying to do a cartoon mobster voice.
Yeah.
And some of them are really good, like the villain, Lad, great voice.
Yeah.
The one of the heroes, the kid with the green hat.
Zero.
Yeah, I don't like his voice. I think it sounds fake.
I actually kind of liked him.
Yeah.
I lived in New York for 10 years. I did know people that talk pretty much exactly like that.
Yeah, all right. I'll believe it when I hear it. It sounds like someone doing a cartoon mobster voice.
You know, there are people that talk like that. Most of them are in New Jersey now. But.
Right. I also love the episode titles.
Yeah.
For some reason, they tickle me. Like, it's just, they remind me, it's almost like they're sort of a satire of the Shonen episode title, where they tell you everything that happens in the episode in the title. But these are just sort of very matter-of-fact.
Yeah, they're almost flip.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it. I'm curious to see where it goes, because I've heard the ending sucks.
It doesn't resolve much as from what I've heard. I'm only at episode 8 right now, but there's only 13 TV episodes and then...
3 OVAs.
Yeah, 3 OVAs that... You know, whenever that happens, whenever a show ends in, like, a few OAVs, it never works.
We'll find out. I mean, I'm definitely going to be watching the rest of it, so that's a...
Well, I'll have... Funimation just sent me the whole thing subbed and dubbed for the website,
okay,
or for streaming, so I'll have that up. Hopefully by the time this is up, if they send me the screen caps in time, if not, you know, within a few days after.
Well, we're also the last two people to have gotten to this show.
I know. Yeah.
I think everyone listening to this is going to be like, it took you this long?
Well, actually, Funny was telling me that, you know, it didn't do that great.
Of course not. What does? Dragon Ball.
Well, compared to even other things. I mean, I think a lot of this is because initially, and I'm pretty sure this was licensor-driven, they released it in singles.
Yeah, that was one of the last single releases.
Yeah.
Or at least one of the few at the time that was being released that way.
Right, but next month the box set's coming out, and I'm, of course, going to wait for that so I can buy it.
What I want to do is, after it's over, I'll be going back to watch the first two over again.
Right.
See if that changes my opinion. Because to me, it's like a great show with a tragically poorly written intro.
Right.
You know, there's no reason for it to be that confusing. And I've seen plenty of shows where you start out, and they always say you start out inside the onion, and you peel the layers away from the outside, you know, but you're starting from the middle of the story.
Yeah, that doesn't work most of the time.
The only time it's ever worked for me was Razaphon. Which was like that.
Which I still never saw.
It's a good show. You should check it out.
Yeah. Everyone tells me it's like Evangelion without being as screwed up.
It's Evangelion on a bigger scale. The scale is larger. And the characters are much more sedate. As a matter of fact, the whole show is much more sedate than Evangelion. I haven't seen it in a really long time, so I couldn't tell you if it holds up now, because I haven't seen it since, like, the beginning part of this decade.
Right.
But, I mean, I really loved it when I saw it. The movie's awful. Don't watch the movie.
Okay.
Watch the series.
I'll check it out at some point. Some of the people on the staff I'm fans of.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing about Bakano that really kind of surprised me in a good way was I like how violence in anime, bloody violence, is shocking again.
Yeah.
Because it very, now that everything's on TV, it pretty rarely happens that, you know, it goes really over the top bloody.
Yeah.
That used to be kind of a pretty much daily thing in anime, and now it's like Gantz and Bakano, and that's pretty much it for recent stuff.
Yeah, and it doesn't ever feel, for whatever reason, it never felt exploitative. It never felt like they were doing it for the sake of it. It felt like, I mean, there were moments where I was laughing because the blood was so ridiculous.
Right, right.
But, like, there's a moment where
It's always driven by the story.
Yeah, that's true. But, there's a moment where Lad cuts a dude's throat, and it's just it's the stereotypical
arterial
anime
spray.
Yeah, yeah, the stereotypical fire hose of blood comes out of the guy's throat, and I was laughing. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the rest of it. It's been a long time since I've seen something I liked that much.
Then again, I really have no problem with exploitative violence in anime.
I'm just saying it services the story.
Right,
part of it doesn't feel tacked on.
Right.
You know, I'm okay with exploitative violence, obviously. My favorite stuff is Berserk and shit like that.
Right.
But it doesn't feel like it's just there just to be like, ooh, violence.
My favorite example of that in anime is, did you ever see the opening of the second episode of Genocyber?
No.
It basically opens with a slow motion shot of, like, these three, like, village children from, you know, the third world being literally shot into pieces by heavy machine gun fire. It's just so over the top.
That's wonderful. So, speaking of behind the times, I was at a Fry's Electronics, for those of you that don't have that in your part of the world. It's a big box electronics retailer.
I've yet to go. I really want to.
I love the place just because it's a giant pile of stuff. Mm-hmm. They tend to stock deep on just about everything, so whatever obscurity you are looking for, they may or may not have it. It's a good place. It's better than, like, a Best Buy.
Okay.
You know, their selection is a lot more broad. But this one near me, which is in Orange County for those listening in California, which is right next to a Goofy Golf place, like an 80s, totally preserved 80s mini golf arcade place.
Oh, excellent.
Complete with, like, airbrushed Merlin on the wall and lords and ye ladies on the bathrooms, you know. Really old arcade machines. It's
wow.
Cool. You can smell the root beer when you walk in.
Root beer and skee ball.
Yeah, root beer and old pizza, yeah. but the Fry's has a very big anime section that I don't think anyone's ever purchased anything from, because it's like a museum of the bubble from, like, 2000 to, like, 2006 or so.
Wow.
2005. I mean, you know, really old ADV Volume 1. They had an Aura Battler Dunbean Volume 1 Plus box. I mean,
wow.
I mean, of course no one bought that.
Do they just have the world's dumbest DVD buyer?
I don't know, but there's a lot of, like, banged up Genion releases, like an old, like, Paradise Kiss box Vol 1 Plus box. They had a lot of that shit.
Complete set of Zipong.
Yeah, stuff like that. Stuff that you don't know why they stocked it in the first place, but it's a huge section. And I found, and I posted a picture of this on Twitter, I found a sort of a last little desperate gasp of ADV. It was a Chrono Crusade complete collection where they apparently just had a piece of key art where the characters are dressed up like Santa Claus and a reindeer. And it said, like, it's the Chrono Crusade Hell of a Holiday Edition.
Oh, my God. Actually, I think I saw that on special on Right Stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure Sean's trying to blow it out, too.
And I guess, well, it was full price, $59.99. You know, and the shrink wrap has got little holes in it and stuff because it's been there for 2 years.
That just reeks of desperation.
But it's super desperate. And the thing is, I never saw these, but apparently they did a whole line of Christmas reissues where they would just take the, you know, like the pencil board Christmas key art that they just created for some new type or whatever, stuck it on the front and called it the Holiday Edition. Of whatever crappy show, but but that led me to thinking, it seems like a pretty dry Christmas season, like holiday season for DVD releases in general.
Yeah,
I noticed even Funimation's schedule is a little light.
It's light, and the bizarre thing about it that I noticed is that they have it used to be for years and years, everyone would release everything in like late November.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a dead spot in the 3 weeks leading up, 2 or 3 weeks leading up to Christmas, and then like a month afterward.
Mm-hmm.
There would be, and I remember when I was at CPM and IATV, we would actively avoid scheduling anything to come out during those times. The general rule being everyone blew their wad at Christmas, no one has any money that time of year, they're just, you know, everyone just returns stuff, trades in something for something that came out that they've been wanting for a while, and that's it. And mm-hmm. then retailers are dead and sending product back during that time.
Right.
I don't know how that has changed other than, you know, the complete near apocalypse of the entire capitalist system.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily true for Hollywood stuff because I've noticed they're rushing everything that was even remotely popular that came out over the last 6-7 months onto DVD and Blu-ray right before the holidays. I mean, literally 3 days before Christmas, District 9 comes out.
Right.
You know?
That's kind of absurd.
Yeah,
that's on my Christmas list. My mom, I know, is not running to Target
2 days before.
2 days before Christmas to pick that up. Well, she might, but my mom's special.
Right. But, I mean, so why do you think that is? For, I mean, especially with regards to anime.
Well, I think largely it's probably the collapse of the retail system.
Right.
I mean, when you think about it, even 3 or 4 years ago, there were way more places that stocked DVD than do now.
Yeah.
We had Suncoast. We had Musicland. We had Tower. We had Virgin.
Yep.
They're all gone now.
Yeah,
every
that's
one
hard to believe.
Yeah, and, you know, that for the big, you know, Hollywood stuff that's new issue, new big Disney movie or family movies coming out, you know, that's fine. People will still go to Walmart and Target and wherever. But for anything that wouldn't get stocked by a big box retailer like that, anything, you know, either deep catalog for Hollywood or any anime for that matter, it probably doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people will just go on Amazon or whatnot.
Yeah. I went out on Black Friday because there were crazy Blu-ray deals and I wanted to score a cheap copy of Gremlins. but it was empty. I mean, not empty, but pretty empty for a Black Friday. I mean, I got a good parking space. There was no line to get in. Everything that was on sale was in abundance. I didn't have any problem finding anything I was looking for. I mean, I guess it's just a shadow of the retail market that they're just saying, okay, well, it's not worth our time to dump a bunch of stuff in December because no one's buying.
Yeah, and I remember it would result in like this huge, you know, everyone working late and around, you know, August, September just to try to meet those deadlines.
Yeah.
I guess if it's a matter of why bother?
So you discovered something recently.
Yeah, well, you know, while I was wide awake at 3 a.m. and having nothing else to do, I...
Besides talk to me, because I'm up at 3:00 a.m.
Yeah, well, your sleep schedule's as fucked as mine is.
Yeah.
But, so I was just kind of burrowing through my giant stash of media. I apparently throw nothing away.
Mm-hmm.
And I stumbled across a CDR archive that a friend of mine made back in 96... of the Venice Archive.
Okay, explain to people what this is.
Okay, the Venice Archive was a big FTP server a big public FTP server that you could download a bunch of anime shit off of back before you could download anything. This was, you know, back in the mid-90s when you were lucky to find a graphic of a show you liked.
Yeah.
I mean, and indeed most of the Venice Archives comprises badly, you know, bad scans off of old issues of New Type.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of an interesting relic to see what people got really excited over back then.
I'm going to guess MIDI files.
Yes, lots of MIDI files.
Perhaps Kiss Dolls, if anyone remembers Kiss Dolls.
Yes, Kiss Dolls, for those who don't, which I imagine is almost everybody
most,
these days,
yeah.
They were these virtual paper dolls. I think it started on like some obscure Japanese-only PC platform, like PC-98, where it was, literally all it was a bunch of overlays that you could slide over a graphic of some cute anime girl.
Yeah, or it would be like Belle Dandy.
Yeah.
And you could put like a different dress on her.
And, you know, when you think about Japan and how creepy that whole society is, that makes total sense.
I don't know if it's a, yeah, they're just paper dolls, but
I'm kidding. I'm being a jerk. But I remember downloading these back in the day because they were anything anime related, and I remember being bored out of my mind. But Robin liked them because she was like 8
and a girl, yeah.
Yes, and a girl.
Did they have the remember like Windows 3.1 window sitters where you'd have like a little crappy GIF of Ray sitting on the window, like, on the top of the window. Do you remember those?
Vaguely. I wasn't a Windows kid. I was a Mac kid.
Right, but yeah. I'm sure people out there will know what I'm talking about. There were a lot of dumb little apps like that.
Oh, and you know, anime fans were so kind of desperate for anime anything at that point.
Yeah.
They would just cram it in all these places where it didn't fit. Like, I remember I had this Apple IIgs game, this, you know, really badly coded shareware game that crashed all the time. And the background music was always bad MIDI of Robot Carnival.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You get the bootleg copy of Oregon Trail. Here lies Shinji.
I would like that.
Yeah. So, so you have a copy, you have a backup of this.
And apparently there's a mirror that's still up.
Okay. How do you, just for, so people know, how do you spell Venice?
Like the city Venice.
Like the city Venice, okay.
Yeah. And there are like old issues of, you know, here's what happened at Katsukan 2.
Oh, man. It sounds like a lot of fun to dig through.
It is. And, you know, there's nothing in there that we would value at all today.
Right.
But at the same time, it's fun to see what people got excited over back then.
256 color GIFs of Sailor Moon and whatnot. All right, well, we should probably go ahead and bring the guest in.
So we're back, and joining us this week is a guy we've been wanting to get on the show pretty much since the beginning. We have Chad Keim, who was the former head of marketing at Genion USA. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Everyone's favorite company, Genion USA. So tell us about what you did. What were your duties when you were there? Oh, I mean, I know you were there for a long time, so.
Yeah.
You were there for like 10 years, weren't you?
I was there a little over 11 years. It's kind of a funny story. Originally, I was hired to do the marketing for the anime products, and I was my own division, the coordinator of anime marketing, because at the time, Laserdisc was 85% of their business, and their marketing manager didn't have time for this anime stuff.
And we were getting old school with the show.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, that's what you get for bringing me on.
This was the era of this was the era of where Pioneer used to put out these laser discs of like concerts and like operas and the like.
Yes, operas. They also did all of Paramount's movies. They also did all of Live Entertainment's movies.
Oh wow!
They pressed the discs for Universal and eventually bought out their inventory, and so they were in. Really into the Laserdisc business because that was their complete business for a long time.
Right.
But within, that was 97, and within a couple years, the percentages flip-flopped, and all of a sudden, anime was 85% of the business, and the former marketing department was working on this tiny little slice that wasn't profitable anymore. But, you know, then Pokemon came along, and Laserdisc went bye-bye.
So what were some of the very first titles you ever worked on? I have to imagine that Tenchi was one of them.
Well, I picked up a little bit on Tenchi the movie, but pretty much that was all done. They really didn't do much marketing for the original Tenchis and for the Tenchi universe. One of the first things I did is I worked on some sales sheets for Dragon Ball Z the movie.
Oh, man, when Pioneer had it. I remember that.
We just launched the movies. We had the trading card game and the TV series, which was kind of, you know, stumbling along. I wasn't really finding a home at the time.
Right.
And then Armitage the Third had just come out, and
and I remember this is right when I was getting into anime.
I
bought all this stuff on VHS.
it was all too expensive for me.
Yeah,
I had Armitage, but the rest of it was just like, oh my god, they want how much for one episode of Tenchi?
Yeah, well, Laserdisc, for sure.
Yeah. It's like $35 for a single episode.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty obnoxious, but, well, you know, I'd just come there from Books Nippon, and with U.S. renditions, we had one episode of Gumbuster for $34.95. Subtitled only, VHS.
Oh, God.
But hey, it came with extensive liner notes, if I remember correctly.
The bad old days. So you were... I actually didn't even know you worked for Books Nippon.
Yes, I was their animation division manager for a year and a half. It was best summed up by my first day of work. I go in, and they told me it was a second interview, and then they just said, well, here's the stuff that you'd have to do. And the first thing you'd have to do is make sure that all of our titles, and we know some of them are expiring, so make sure you renegotiate the contracts.
Whoa.
And I open up the file drawer, and I'm like, wow, there's you know, maybe 20. And 17 of them are with this company called LA Hero. Oh, that's funny. LA Hero just got bought by this company in England called Manga Entertainment.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that's funny. I just remembered an ad. They were releasing this Appleseed dubbed 1998. That's right, we have it subtitled, $34.98. We're so screwed. Almost all the titles were licensed by Manga Entertainment, and they use that to get into the United States.
Right.
So, you know, from the first day I was doomed. and they did not know. Some of them were...
How do you not know that?
They had kind of a con man for a year. As you know, in charge of their business, and there was internal political struggling. Even though there was only 10 people in the office, there was still politics among the guys from Japan.
Well, we are talking about the anime industry here. there has to be con men and office politics that get in the way somehow.
Oh, yeah. And
you can put two people in a room and suddenly make it some big, horrible forum event.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just ugly. It should have been, you know, opening my eyes to, you know, dealing with certain aspects of Japanese business, but
so as the years went on, eventually this led into the bubble, like in the early part of this decade.
Yes.
What were those years like at Genio? Because you guys used to be, or not that you work there anymore, of course, but they used to be one of the big three. It was Funimation, ADV, and Genio.
Yeah.
And you know, Bandai and Viz sort of hovering in the background.
Yeah.
So what were those years like? Because I remember Genio spent more money on marketing than.
On everything.
Pretty much every... they spent more money on pretty much everything than any other company did. So there must have been some good years in there.
There were some very good years, although I don't know if we spent as much on marketing some of the other guys. Maybe on some specific project, like we politically did not necessarily want for our number one anime magazine in the industry to be Animerica, which was a Viz publication.
Yep.
Right.
And there was also the issue of we wanted to broaden the market a bit, so we helped Wizard start Anime Insider by committing to, I think it was like $25,000 in ads an issue.
Wow. It didn't last that long.
No. It only lasted for the first four inaugural issues.
Right.
But that got us very prominent placement, and when they got it launched, and Wizard was behind it, and that opened up, you know, a whole section of the marketplace that Animerica wasn't addressing.
Yeah, right now you're fueling so much paranoid fanboy company buying ad space in magazines.
Well, it was pretty overt back then. I remember, didn't Jenny On used to have, like, these giant 16-page pull-out, like, catalog sections in certain magazines?
Yes, that was in video business.
Oh, okay.
And that was primarily at the video trade industry.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a consumer thing.
Unfortunately, the video trade industry was a very small slice of our business, so we wound up committing roughly 10-20% of our budget towards a section of the industry that gave us 5-10% of our business. And I know it, you know, for the VP in charge at the time, that was what he was hoping to cultivate. He was hoping to take, you know, the big movies that we had, you know, like Akira, and be able to push that into the mom-and-pop video stores and grow that segment of the market.
But the mom-and-pop video stores were pretty much dying or dead at that point.
That's correct. And right about the time that we started buying our way in with these huge inserts once a month, Blockbuster and Hollywood and movies had 80% of the business, and you could do all of that business with 3 phone calls.
Right. Mm-hmm. There was no point in wasting money on trade advertising.
In my opinion. But, you know, you don't always get to do what you think is right. You just got to do what you're told to do, and you do it. Of course, by the time that I became head of the marketing, we stopped doing those.
Yeah. Right. Well, by that time, there were no mom and pops at all.
But there was still a video business magazine.
Right. You could still spend that money, yeah.
Yeah, so at that point, it was like, well, let's get the managers of these stores to buy this stuff. But really, towards the end, 80% of the business was Musicland, which became Transworld,
right,
and Best Buy. And Best Buy didn't get into the business until they bought Musicland and realized, oh, this stuff sells. I'm heavily on the economic side of the business, so I have a tendency to look at it in the percentages and where the effort was going and how things played out.
Okay, so then the big question is, what went wrong? What happened?
Well, the market, there was a flip in profitability, and there was this huge delay in being able to recognize it. Mm-hmm. Let's roll back the clock to, say, 2002, 2003. DVD is launching. Pokemon is going nuts. Everybody sees 20% year-over-year growth in sales, if not more. So, flush with cash, Genion and ADV and Funimation start going, well, you know, maybe if I can get a monopoly on the acquisition side of the market, then these guys won't be making more money, and then they won't have more titles to sell, and we'll be able to get further in front, or we'll be able to actually get in front of the other guys. So they started bidding up on the properties. And we're like, well, okay, you know. So when we first bought, say, Trigun, and we had 6,000 units break even, and we sold 20, then 30, we're like, well, okay, well, maybe on the next title we can bid 15. Well, for Vandred, we wound up bidding like, our break even was like 20,000 units, which was outrageous. Mm-hmm. And they never got there, by the way.
Really?
Vandred, you don't say.
Quick, call it Funimation.
Yeah. Well, you know, they started bidding these enormous sums of money. And at the same time, we're bidding on properties that we don't know when the exact street date is because they're still in production. Heat Guy J, for example. It sounded like a gem of a property because, you know, it's like from the guys who did...
Escaflowne.
Escaflowne, and the character designers and the directors. And we're like, okay, well, if it does Escaflowne numbers, well, yeah, sure, we can bid this number. And you factor in your 20% growth, and it's not due for 2 years, so that's, you know, 40% or whatever.
Oh, wow. So it's basically speculation at this point.
Yes, because in order to get the title, you had to give them the money then. Yeah, yeah. And then by the time the title came out, there was a completely different world. And we didn't realize there was a completely different world in, say, 2004, because at the time there were so many people pumping out all these titles, and they were pushing them into the market, and at first the Musiclands and Best Buys of the world were like, yeah, stick it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. But eventually they're like, okay.
Enough of the anime.
we're getting a lot of this in our warehouse and a lot of it on our shelves, and it's not going anywhere. But
started coming back.
It did. And I can't speak for any of the other companies, but for our company, our sales manager was very bullish, and he kept saying it was going to sell through, not only to the customer, but also to our managers, and the presidents of the companies, and people making the buying decisions, so they didn't know that inventory was sitting there.
Oh.
So when suddenly...
Jeez, what a mess.
Wow.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Cue early 2005, and Genyon has been sold to Dentsu by Pioneer Electronics.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as part of that deal, we had our... Well, I can't say the number because I don't really know it, but let's just say 7 figures of cash got turned over to Pioneer Electronics as part of the deal. So all of the Pokemon money, which Pioneer Entertainment was sitting on and using to fuel their business, went away. And we suddenly were sitting on that much in debt to Dentsu and an interest payment to deal with. And then a few months later, we get 1/4 to 1/5 of our sales for the previous year returned to us.
Oh my God.
Oh man. Ouch.
It was a very rude awakening. And then suddenly, you know, not everybody experienced that, but everybody did experience a cash crunch because suddenly you have to give up, say, 1/5 of your sales from the previous year. And the bigger your company and the more business you did, the worse you were hammered.
Right, so because you had all that cash in the bank and suddenly you had to give it back to the retailer.
Right. And then, not only that, the way accounting works is, when you get, you're trying to estimate the value of your inventory. Mm-hmm. And so we did an 18-month rolling average where you calculated your average sales, and then that, for the last 18 months, is your sales in perpetuity. And then you calculate, okay, so if I sell 5 videos a month, 18 months out, 5 times 18... Let's say 10, because the math is easier.
Okay.
But anyway, 5 times 18 would be 90 videos. So you'd have 90 videos would be good. Anything above that, you have to say you might never sell it. Well, when you walk into a month and you were returned 1/5 of everything you've sold, and they average it out, why, everything's negative. That means all of your inventory is now worthless, and you now have to take a charge in accounting against that asset. So suddenly, our inventory was worth less than zero because all the storage, all the fees have to be written off.
Right, all the storage fees, all the shipping fees, because what a lot of people don't realize in the video business is the company themselves don't warehouse all that product they make. It's sitting like at some fulfillment house.
Right, or in our case, it was a duplicator. So we didn't have a storage fee. It was part of the duplication cost.
Okay.
But if we had to pay $2 a video, normally we would say it's an asset. And that would sit there until it's sold, and no big deal. It's just tying up cash. But when it suddenly becomes an expense, not only is it tying up your cash, but now you have to take that cash, and now you have to take it and do a charge against your profits. So not only did we have to have a huge loss in the money we gave back to our customers, Musicland and Best Buy, but on top of that, all of the inventory they returned, plus all the inventory we already had to be written off. So suddenly we had 6-figure write-offs.
Well, that sounds like a giant, horrible mess.
Yes. And then suddenly you're looking at, okay, well, now this title that we said was going to sell 20,000 units actually sold 10. Which means that on that title that we bid on that we said was going to sell 40,000, we would now estimate it at 20,000.
Mm.
But we've already bought that title and it's not coming out for 2 years.
And so to bring this down to, because anime fans... like number, well, number, well, they're right. I was about to say the numbers are sort of catnip for them in terms of like unit sales. Like
yeah.
They always want to know that stuff, and you're pretty far removed from it now. So can we just get like what was like the biggest like surprise? Like you licensed something and it suddenly did a huge number of units you weren't expecting.
Well, one of the big surprises was Pokemon. We knew it was going to be big, but we thought maybe 20,000-30,000 units.
Yeah.
Would be reasonable and decent. And our break even was much lower than that. And then the first unit went out the door at 100,000 units, and we're like, yay! And then within the first month, it was up to 1 million units.
Wow. Oh my God.
In a month? Jeez.
It was insane. We wound up doing 8 to 10 million units of the first 12 volumes that we released.
Man, anybody million. Would be so happy to have a hit like that now.
Right.
I can't even imagine an anime selling 1 million units now. I mean, maybe still the Pokemon stuff does pretty well still, but...
Well, not on, nearly on that scale.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
And by the time we were getting towards the end, it wasn't even close to that. And then we were also getting huge returns, you know, 1 million units returned.
Because all these retailers had... also engaging in speculation, but really, you know, bought
right.
a ton of those.
Right.
And then Pokemon kind of withered, it never died entirely, and then they're just
like, it's a sustained franchise. I mean, at least the video games.
But it never it's not what it was in 99.
No, and it'll still sell its 10,000 units on DVD. But you know, if you're dreaming of your million units and you're getting 10,000, you're disappointed.
Yeah.
But if you are shooting for 6 and you're getting 10, you're happy. And that's really the problem with the anime industry right now. It's a matter of expectations versus reality. And you know, when you spend as much money for a hit series, like probably the same amount of money or more was spent on Full Metal Alchemist as Hikai J, but then Full Metal Alchemist did 10 times as many units as say Hikai J.
Right.
Ayoria Aoshi outsold Hikai J.
Oh man, poor Hikai J. Hey, did you have one of those leather jackets?
I finally got one when we closed down the office. There was one behind. Okay. That was, you know, that was a horrible year for me because Hikai J was my title, and I spent more on that title than any other thing. But it also taught me that it's like the Titanic. Your title's like the Titanic. Your audience has pretty much a good idea of what they're getting. And you can shift it a little bit, but you can't, if it's got a bad reputation, you can't counter it.
Yeah. If one thing about Hikai J is, like, you know, the Funimation put it out again, and they gave it to us to stream, and it's our worst streaming title.
Wow.
Even today. And everyone kind of, a lot of people even recognize today, it's not that bad a show.
Yeah.
No.
I actually kind of liked it.
Yeah, but, you know, even today, it can't overcome that stigma. Maybe it's the name.
Maybe.
It's the name, and the key art is just a big, ugly robot face.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So the assets were not particularly appealing.
Well, at the time, we had two things that worked into that cover. And one was Terminator 3 was coming out.
No.
And they thought, well, maybe we can pick up some collateral interest there.
No, I don't think so. And,
but the real crux of the issue was we had exactly two pieces of art.
Yep.
The group shot and the robot head.
Which nothing was on the back else. Of the jacket.
That's right. And we had nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. And we're like, okay, well, we can have this crowd shot on the cover, which tells you nothing and you can't see anything when it's on a shelf anyway. Or we can have this big old hunkin' half robot head. Well, maybe the robot fans will like it. I don't know.
So was that the biggest boondoggle, you think, for Hikai J?
Oh, it's really hard to measure the biggest boondoggle. you have, you know, the Hikai J's of the world. Then you have Demon Lord Dante with an estimated 30,000 units to break even.
30,000 break even for Demon Lord Dante?
And no Go Nagai title has really ever sold more than
five?
Five total. Five. Yeah. Not 5,000. Five. And,
although Psybusters may have been worse. Psybusters sold less than 100 units.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
And it were, at that time, minimum 10,000 units to break even. Minimum. You know, and these are just, they just add up. And so Hikai J may be one of the worst, but in terms of straight unit sales, Rumiko Takahashi Anthology. Two digits of sales.
What?
The first volume may have sold 300.
And then volume 2 was like 60 or something like that?
80, maybe.
You know, these are, you know, I've told people that several shows failed to crack 100 units, and usually they go, oh, you're exaggerating. No.
No, you're not. No. And but see, the thing is, right about then, I mean, this is the magic and the nightmare of the internet. Samurai Champloo, people are like, well, it was on Cartoon Network. Didn't go on to Cartoon Network until we were already on our second or third volume. And we were already selling 40, 50,000 units before it ever aired. Once it aired, 10% increase.
So it really didn't make that big a difference.
No, I mean, it did not. I mean, it was already going on a certain momentum. And, you know, the titles like, it followed a certain pattern for a title that it didn't matter whether or not it was on TV because it sold at certain levels and it just kept going. And then that was one where people had seen it on the internet and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best titles. The internet is great for the best titles because you find out you like this series and you want it and you need it.
Mm-hmm.
But then for these other titles that are questionable, people see a bit and go, meh.
Right.
I don't need to see more.
I have to know. This is just going to be the greatest thing. How did the cutesy stuff sell? The Rosen Maidens and the what was that little snow fairy sugar?
Tiny Show Snow Fairy.
Yeah. How did that stuff do? I got to know.
Meh.
What's meh? Give me a number.
10?
No. No. I mean, six. We're looking... Okay, so Sugar did much worse than Frozen Maiden. Frozen Maiden may have done 4 or 5.
And that's just across the series, no, or for the first volume? Or...
But you also have to understand, Frozen Maiden came out, and a month later, we were quote-unquote no longer doing business.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So...
Yeah, it's not
whether or not it had legs or not, I mean, I don't have any idea what Funimation did with it, because by the time Funimation actually got all the masters, I was out of the company.
Yeah.
You know, and I was out of the business and no longer following it. But I suspect it probably didn't do huge numbers after that. I know for Sugar, you know, it was a great title. At the time, I had my daughters were 6 and 7. Mm-hmm. Adored it. But the problem we had is, we don't have access to a way to sell it into the young girl market, mm-hmm, without a lot of money.
Right.
You have to buy TV ad time. You have to...
Or jump into, say, a Nickelodeon magazine at $30,000 a page.
Oh, my God.
Figure out a way to get it into Toys R Us.
Right. And, you know, so we're looking at the market we have, and our sales reps are going, man, that can do maybe 2,000 units, which means our budget is maybe $2,000.
You can spray paint some walls.
Right.
Buy some spray paint, maybe.
So, you know, there's not much you can do. You put it out there and hope that it just survives on its own.
So who is making these licensing decisions? I have to ask.
There were, you know, I would love to throw someone under the bus, but, you know...
I'm not asking for an individual name for us to hunt
down. Well, the common conception was that Dentsu was forcing your hand.
Not necessarily. And, you know, for example, Little Snow Fairy Sugar, that was before Dentsu was even involved. That was actually licensed by TBS, and I think that was on the same contract as Mahoromatic. Mm. So, in certain cases, it's, well, you bundle these packages together. When we were trying for Akira... we managed to get them to throw in 3x3Eyes, and they wanted us to take a kid's property called Miffy. So you have Akira, 3x3Eyes, and Miffy.
I remember Miffy.
Yeah, the little bunny with the X mouth. Yeah.
Yes. The one Hello Kitty copied way, way back. I mean, this is old, old kid's property. And so it's all in one contract. And you bundle these things together, and you hope that one of them, you get three, you figure one will do average, and you hope one will be a hit and pay off the sucker. But then, you know, at the way things were going, none of them would make the money that you had hoped they would make. Mm. And so almost every contract was a losing contract from 2005 to 2007 for Jeez. One reason or another.
That's a tragedy. So, all right, there's so many questions I want to ask, and we have such limited time. But we should get to the Twitter questions, because we have a ton of them.
Well, I've one before we
go on
that. Now, one common thought I had about the whole bubble era was that there was so much product being pushed out. There is no way enough attention could be paid to any one property to actually properly market it to the consumer.
Internally or externally, you are correct. You know, we couldn't even pay attention to our own stuff. It was like... Okay, well, this is what we have to force out this week, and then next week we have that other thing, and so you better get this ad done. Oh, we don't have art from Japan? Oh, well, get it out. Do something. Get it out. And then, you know, things were delayed all the time, and so, well, okay, we can't properly market this if we don't have a contract, and we don't know for sure we have it. No contract, no art, but the title's, we're not going to slip the deadline because we have to make our budget. And if we let this title slip, we won't make our budget. And by the fact we rush it out, it's guaranteed not to sell the units we expect it, which means we have to make up the budget somehow, so you better get some more titles licensed so we can throw it onto this mess.
It's like a giant flaming tire pile.
Oh, my.
Budget was king for the Japanese.
What you're describing to me is basically a giant gold rush that ended up being a pile of shit.
It was like... We were riding this gigantic glowing star that suddenly became a black hole. And it was self-negatively reinforcing. We paid too much for the titles, which made us ship too much product, which made us get returns, which made us lose money, so we had to release more titles, but there was already a glut. So we had to try to make up the sales, but then it actually wound up selling less, so then we had to release more titles to try to make up for the sales and thereby add to the problem.
Just picture this giant, like, glowing star slamming straight into that Heat Guy J robot face. So that brings another question. I got to get this in. Was there ever any internal rumbling about switching over to the thin pack box set system that Funimation's doing now? Because clearly it's doing, but it's working much better for them than singles.
There had been talk about doing the releases, but here's the problem that we had. We needed to make our budget. Mm-hmm. And we were releasing... We didn't wait until we had the whole thing dubbed and released. Mm-hmm. We were releasing it as soon as we possibly could, which meant by the time we got the first volume finished, we hadn't even gotten the masters for the second volume sometimes.
Wow.
So it's kind of like... You see it with the way we did Helsing, where we had the... You know, it was out and it was released and we didn't have the volume. But that was a more obvious version of the nightmare that we lived each and every month for each and every title.
Right.
A lot of them weren't done because we had licensed it when it was going on air. And so that was never an option.
Right.
It was always, we have to release the individuals and we have to shoot for profitability. Because you know what? We tried it at $29.98 and we saw the sales. And we tried it at $24.98 and it sold about the same. And we tried a few at $19.98 and it was about the same.
Wow.
Price did not really have that big an impact because, quite frankly, they knew what titles they wanted. They being the fans out there.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they want. If they were willing to pay for it, they were willing to pay for it. And if they weren't willing to pay for it, there was the internet.
Right. So you just had this core of people that were buying and that was it. And you couldn't really expand out.
There are probably magical price points, but when we're dealing with, okay, if we have to do a bundle at $40 and the individuals are still at $30,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to kill that market. So eventually maybe we'll come out with a bundle, but we have to give it a chance to find its legs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, Samurai Champloo outsold Naruto for the first year on a volume-by-volume basis.
Wow.
And we were charging $5 more.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, if you remember our other conversations about Rumiko Takahashi and, you know, Psybusters, we needed the money.
Right. it sounds like waiting for the box set was just death. Like, you couldn't wait because you'd just be losing money that entire time.
Pretty much. I mean, we needed the revenue.
Yeah.
We had interest payments to make, and we had sales figures to hit. And if we didn't hit them, then heads would roll. And we didn't hit them anyway, and heads did roll.
Right.
And so it was a very difficult situation to deal with. And we knew that the price point was eroding, but at the same time, Tidal definitely had much more impact than, you know, the fact that it said Samurai Champloo on the box cover meant much more than the price. There were certain exceptions, and there were certain times where you could do a bundle and you would do the price point and it would really make a difference. But since we had to release the individual volumes first because of the timing and the budget, we couldn't release a low-priced box set until those had come back. We wanted them to try to sell as they were. But if we had released the box set at the same time as the last volume, first of all, no one would buy the last volume. None of the retailers, because they'd say, well, this box set's much cheaper. Oh, and by the way, since you're undercutting these individual volumes, you can have them all back now. So there was this game.
Your box sets were never reasonably priced, though. Like, they were always like $130 for for Trigun. It was like $130,
$150.
$199.98. Oh, sorry,
God. There you go. But that was because it was continuing to sell at $199.98.
Right, I figured, right. Yeah.
And in our last 2-3 years, we did start to have more reasonably priced box sets. Like, we did a Tenchi Universe went from $199 to like $79.
Yeah, too much for that.
Right. No, but when we price it at $79, that means it hits Best Buy, Musicland, and Amazon at like 59 or $55. You know, $50, $60. And it moved. It sold a lot of units. And we didn't like the thin pack so much as we liked the multi-pack.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the thin pack, you still have to redesign each of the covers and print each of the covers.
Right.
Which takes your inventory cost and multiplies it by 7.
Right.
And on that single 8-disc cassette that was only 2 DVD AMRAEs wide,
mm-hmm.
that cost us less than half of an 8-disc thin pack.
I have a couple questions I have to cram in there.
You know what? It's fine. We've been told to go long on this show, so it's okay.
All right. So there are two things I really have to ask what happened.
Uh-oh. Well, we'll see if I can answer.
Okay. If you can't answer, that's fine. First, the Toei DVDs.
The customer is always right.
And that was a service deal, right?
Yes, it was a service deal. Okay. And the licensor was Toei. And
Briefly, just to remind people what we're talking about.
Okay.
This was four titles, I think. Slam Dunk, that weird OVA.
Interlude, I think.
Interlude. Air Master.
Air Master. Yes. Okay, three, yeah.
I only cared about Slam Dunk myself, but...
That's all anyone really cared about, I think.
It was strictly a deal where they said... Where we said, we will distribute for you. And we bought their business unwisely with a minimum guarantee. Then they decided they wanted to release it as inexpensively as possible. And spent spent as little money as possible on production. And then
we could tell, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you had subtitles run off the screen.
Yeah, or, you know, little annoying things like... I speak 12, maybe 20 words of Japanese, and I could tell they mistranslated things. It just bombed. People said there's no quality control, I could get better on the internet, and they did. And we got hosed because in our distribution agreement, we had more skin in the game than Toei did. So they got to keep their minimum guarantee, and we got to keep the black eye.
Bandai Visual USA.
Very similar deal. Wisely, we didn't pay as an advance, but let's put it this way. Bandai Visual USA could have licensed everything they had to Bandai Entertainment, yet they didn't, because they thought they knew better how to release anime.
Clearly.
Charging $120 for a movie.
Right.
Because that's what they do in Japan.
Right.
So that was pretty much pure arrogance.
Pretty much.
Okay. And lastly, when ADV almost took over for everything, you guys did. And then sent out a press release, even.
Yeah.
Sent out a note to all the retailers that this was happening at this date. And then all of a sudden, yank. What happened?
Now, this one, I'm going to have to dance delicately, but not too delicately, because...
ADV no longer exists either.
Well, not only that, but there were maybe two people in our office who knew.
Oh.
And there were maybe four people in our office who knew before the rest of the company did, because we were told the same day the press release was released. Now, somehow, people in Japan knew months and months before we did. And that explained why it was suddenly so difficult to license titles. But all we know is that they announced the deal before due diligence had been completed. And by the time... You know, what, 3-4 weeks later, suddenly the deal was off. So I must suspect that something came out in due diligence where they decided this was not going to be in anybody's best interest. And I don't know whether that was a personality issue or whether they saw financial troubles that hadn't been seen before. But I do know that when we pulled out, that's when Sojitz pulled out. When Dentsu Japan pulled out of the deal, that's when Shoujitz Japan pulled out of their deal with ADV. So I don't know what happened, but I can just, you know.
Basically a bomb went off.
Yes. Right. You see the mushroom cloud and go, ooh, that couldn't be good.
Yeah. All right. Okay, we've got to get to these Twitter questions.
Sorry.
Oh, it's totally fine. It's great stuff. So, Twitter questions. Okay, from Exodora UK. What capacity does Genion USA exist in now, and will we see new titles like Kyokara Mal Season 3 in conjunction with Funimation? I don't know if you could even really answer that.
Right now, Genion USA is a intellectual property holding company.
Right.
And it will only exist until the contracts expire. They will not license anything new. There are a couple of offices with accountants, one producer in case something goes wrong, and a human resources person.
Okay, from same guy, is it true that the company was in recovery, but the decision came down from Japan because it wasn't recovering fast enough?
Well, we had leveled off in the amount of loss that we were incurring every year.
We were losing the same amount of blood.
Yeah.
Just not more.
I think there was the possibility for recovery. We had salvaged our relationships with our retailers, and of course, when we pulled out, we immediately sabotaged all those. But I think at a certain point, they had just run out of credibility chips with the home office. And so things are going to turn around. Things are going to turn around. Okay, well, you missed your budget by 20%. And, you know, I can't blame them for pulling the plug on us. But yes, I can, you know, because they were going to pull the plug on our executive if he didn't give them the budget they wanted to see. So the executive gave them the budget they wanted to see, even though we wound up with budgets where 40% of the titles we put in there were not licensed, and 20% of them would never be licensed.
So you were budgeting titles that you had not licensed.
And that we were pretty sure would go to other people.
What?
What? Oh, hey, man. It's kind of a fun house has gone on down there.
Because now you would be like, well, you know, don't worry. Yeah, with just putting this in as a holding pattern, we're going to get a title just like this. What would that title be? Because, you know, there's a big difference between Chobits and Hitkai J in sales. And in market. And we need to know where to sell this. So it was kind of weird.
Okay. From Hello Navi, considering how Jenny Han licensed so many titles, how much consideration was put into selling a show to a certain audience? For example, Beautiful Joe was marketed to kids, even had a TV airing, but what about stuff like Papo Tan?
Well, we would base our marketing on two key aspects. One, how much did we expect it to sell reasonably? And two, where did we expect to sell this? So Beautiful Joe, we got it on the Kids WB. It was based on a hit video game franchise. There were very high expectations, so we spent quite a bit of money trying to hit kids.
Did it go anywhere?
Unfortunately, no, it did not. We wound up with a bit of a split where we had a video game that was a older teen video game and a TV show that was a younger tween preteen video TV show.
Yeah.
So the fans of the video game couldn't give a crap. And the fans of the TV show were far and few and in between because they were little kids.
Yeah.
So without the pester factor, you don't get movement. For something like, say, Popotan, it was a very cute show and tons of nudity and some of it underage. And so, you know, you had to be a little bit careful on how you marketed it. And the expectations were okay for Popotan, but the budget wasn't very big, and we had a little bit of a nightmare situation where sales were down by, I think, you know, 10-20% for the year, which meant we had to cut our budget by 10-20%, but we still had to market this title, even though we just suddenly had no money. So,
and
titles released at the end of the year are a nightmare because they have no money.
Such a circular clusterfuck at every stage.
The next question was from this Severance to Gerald from Anime World Order. What does he feel the cause of Jenny-On's demise was, other than the economic climate? And I think you just spent the last 40 minutes answering that question.
Yeah,
so
this happened before the economy went to hell anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we preceded the economic climate problem. So yeah, to encapsulate, it's political, financial, death by optimism. There's this wonderful term called bidder's remorse. The person who bids the most to win the title will probably discover that they overbid.
I'm so glad those bidding wars days are over.
Well, there's only one person bidding.
Yeah, so maybe they can make money now.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Okay, sort of two questions about the same thing here. Is it true Jenny-On finished dubbing the second half of Lupin the Third? And then there's another question. That's from Zaruda. There's another similar question from Penguin Truth. They want to know why you stopped releasing the second Lupin the Third series before everything kind of went to hell.
We released every volume of Lupin that we had under contract. And we dubbed only the episodes of Lupin that we had under contract. Right. We had options for more. However, the sales were less than half of expectation. And, you know, this is a situation where the title in Japan is so popular and has so much prestige, they would not be able to license it at the price in which it could make money here.
Right. Yeah, everybody thinks that that's going to be popular in America. No, it's never been popular in America.
That's a TV show from the 70s. It looks like, you know...
Well, this specifically was the newer one, right?
No, this was...
Oh, the 70s one.
This
okay.
was the 70s one. It's a situation where it's just the nostalgia colors their perspective in Japan, and it colors their idea of how well it will do here.
It's like trying to license Doraemon.
Yeah.
Tetsujin 28.
Oh, God.
Oh, I completely forgot it.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Tetsujin 28.
That was one where we were trying to impress our home office, and we gave them a nice fat bid and then proved that we couldn't sell it.
Of course you couldn't. No one's ever heard of Tetsujin. What was it, Gigantor here back in the 60s?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, also from Zerua, why did the company bet on mediocre harem and shonen shows by the end?
You license what you can get. And quite frankly, harem shows always seem to sell to a certain degree.
When Law of Ueki comes knocking, you gotta answer the door.
Well, unfortunately, Law of Ueki wasn't a harem show. Law of Ueki was a teen boys fantasy show, like Dragon Ball Z, which is, you know, it's...
Without the sales potential.
Yeah, it's mutant cousin.
But Deers sold.
Deers sold okay. I think we probably got very close to break even on that.
I love that that's the measure for success. We got close to breaking even.
Yeah, well, if we got into that topic, we'd be here for another 20 minutes. There's a pet peeve that we'll discuss some other day. We focused on the titles we could A, get, and B, those were the titles that were being made. And, you know, if you say, well, you know, you could have done much better with Claymore. Well, we bid on Claymore. We just didn't get it. We bid on X-Holic or whatever the official pronunciation would be.
I guess it's Holic.
Holic. There wasn't a title out there that we probably didn't bid on. Now, just what we released is what we got.
Zapang.
Yeah. Nice pro Japanese military World War II shows aimed at 30 plus year old males who don't follow the anime boards.
Okay, from By Real, you took a risky move licensing Hajime no Ippo. What made the company pull the trigger, and did it return on the investment? I'm going to guess what the answer is for the second part of that one, but Hajime no Ippo, what was...
in inverse order, it bombed. We never got close to making our money back. What made us take the risk was that the core anime market was really impacted. And this is, you know, why you sort of take a chance on a flyer on shows like Sugar. Unfortunately, in both of those cases, we didn't license it as if it was a experimental show. We licensed it as if it was going to be a reasonable hit. So on both of those, we got nailed. We also did Hajime no Ippo because it's a great show.
It is a good show.
Yeah, that kind of destroys my soul that it bombed so badly.
Yeah, well, I think there was this one convention where Jerry Chu and I came to the conclusion that the next big genre in anime would be sports. Because we figured Slam Dunk would be coming out, and Hajime no Ippo, and these were great shows. And
really? That was your conclusion?
Well, what were we going to say? There was no Moe yet. This was, you know, a couple years, you know, this was like 2005, 6. And, we, you know, now here's the thing you got to know about Jerry Chu and myself. We play basketball together.
Right.
All right.
So we are sports fanatics.
So we can blame Jerry Chu for Dando then.
No, not Dan. Golf is not a sport.
Right.
But, you know, they licensed the basketball title because, you know, he was all interested in it too. And what it turns out to be is...
Dear boys.
Anime fans...
Dear boys. And
are too passive.
Yep.
To get into sports shows.
Not only that, sports fiction has never done well in this country, ever.
Nah, it's never been a big thing.
No.
The occasional movie.
Yeah. At best.
Yeah. And, yeah, it does have a tendency not to be as strong. You get exceptions.
Yeah.
But they have a tendency to be football related.
Yep.
Right.
Notably, iShield 21 doesn't do that well over here.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, from Tofu Mazda. I actually know the answer to this one. Which studio did Genion use for the dubs of Familiar of Zero and Lyrical Nanoha? It's been noted that many of the actors on these shows took voice acting classes through Bang Zoom. Is there any connection between Bang Zoom and these productions? Answer, yes. Also, is there a reason why none of the dub staff was credited anywhere on the DVDs?
Well, I don't remember the answer to this question, so maybe you can handle it.
That was a totally shady thing that Bang Zoom was running.
Yeah.
Oh, was this their
yes.
experimental education?
Yes, where yeah, they were basically getting students from their classes to do the shit for free.
Right.
For experience.
Yeah,
they were doing... This was pretty shady, too, because they would, like... When real voice actors would come in, I heard rumors that they would hide their whiteboards that had their schedule on it.
Oh, so they shows. Couldn't see they were doing it.
Right.
Totally. This is shady backroom Bang Zoom stuff. Yes, Bang Zoom was involved with it.
I have no idea about that. But I could tell you this. At that time, we were under pressure to cut our dubbing costs by at least half.
Yeah. Hence the Odex dubs.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. Because if we thought the title was going to sell 30 and it was coming in at 10, well, we had to cut all the costs. And by the time, you know, we started releasing things like Zipang, and we're like, okay, well, there's no way in hell this is going to sell 15,000 units, so you guys have got to get this cost down to almost nothing. Or subtitled only.
Yeah, Odex charged, what, like $2,000 an episode or something like that?
Something like that. Oh. It was less than $5,000. And then you couldn't do that here.
No.
So Bang Zoom did what they could to get what business they could.
And managed to piss off virtually the entire voice acting community in the process.
Well, you know, Bang Zoom did what they had to do to keep some business.
Yeah, and yeah.
To be fair, they weren't the only ones doing shady things.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, anime.
And you also, you know, look at Funimation. A lot of that stuff isn't union.
Yeah, well,
none of it is.
Yeah.
Right? It's Texas.
It's yeah. Texas, exactly. There are certain advantages to the location in Dallas and in Houston of when ADV was doing it.
Oh. From Thomas Zoth. First, I want to pay my respects to Jedion. Thank you. We miss you. We love you.
Rest in peace.
I've recently come into contact with all sorts of levels and layers of fan delusion and was curious to get an opinion on what someone in the industry thinks of the idea that Japanese creators and American licensees are in an active conspiracy against the anime fan in order to extort them for as much money as possible. I think most sane people are unaware that such delusion exists, and addressing it head-on may be necessary to understand the scope of the problem. I think basically this boils down to, were you just trying to gouge the fans?
Yes and no. Yes, it is a business.
Right.
You try to make as much money as possible, because if you don't make money, you die. And if you don't make at least, say, 20% more than it cost, there's no reason to make another show. And if you can, you want to make twice as much money as it costs, so that way the next show is paid for, or, God forbid, you could actually do something better, mm-hmm. cooler. You know, if there was no crazy bidding back in the early 2000s, Gonzo would never have done those crazy, amazing shows that they did. Mm-hmm. But no, it was not actively, let's see how bad we can screw people over.
Right.
It was, okay, we're going to sell 5,000 units at 29, and we're going to sell 5,500 units at $24 and 6,000 units at $19. There's absolutely no incentive to go at $19 because the extra 1,000 units costs you don't make the money. You lose money.
Yeah.
So it's okay, well, we'll make less people happy, but we'll have roughly the same amount of money, and we'll be able to hopefully invest that in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that pretty much wraps it up for the questions I'm willing to ask. While we have you here, it seems like we got to take the opportunity. Do you want to do like a lightning round of just like how'd it do?
Oh yes. Oh, hold on. Let me.
I can pull it up.
Okay. Cool. Please.
Okay. So we'll start with Amazing Nurse Nanako.
That made money.
Okay. Aquarian Age. Sign for Evolution.
Aquarian Age. Oh, that was a CD.
Oh.
It was a CD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. They did music for a little while.
Yeah. How did that do?
We made money on the first 2 years of CD releases, and we broke even on the third.
I never would have guessed that.
Me neither.
The problem was the soundtracks that were trying to get foisted on us were less and less relevant to what people actually wanted to hear. And we also had the situation where, you know, we didn't pay that much in the beginning mm-hmm. because no one was doing the business. And we were one of the CD businesses that were still kind of going.
Okay. Bottle Fairy, I know that was you.
Yeah, that was us. Yeah, another cute show that probably well beloved by a lot of people, but did not do well.
Cardcaptor Sakura.
Cardcaptor Sakura. Oh. Well, let's say that on this one, I do want to talk numbers. Cardcaptor Sakura was initially hoped to do 5,000 units subtitled. Cardcaptors was hoped to do 100,000 units dubbed.
Oh, yeah, Cardcaptors. I remember that.
Yeah, the Nelvana dub. That wound up doing 2,000 units dubbed, and Cardcaptor Sakura was doing 15,000 units subtitled.
Wow.
Until we got to Volume 4.
Oh.
Because they were worried that the content in that volume would jeopardize the TV renewal contract, and so they wanted us to withhold it. And the fact that we released it out of order cut the sales in half. You give an anime fan a reason to change their mind, they will take it, and they won't come back.
Okay. This is depressing.
Wow.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, Fushigi Yugi.
Very, very well.
I would assume so.
Even at $200 a box.
Yeah.
It made money before the DVD was released.
Oh, wow.
Because VHS?
Right. Mysterious Play, yes. What was I going to say here? Gatekeepers?
Unfortunately, it didn't do well.
I didn't think so. Gungrave.
Gungrave did okay.
You must have had high expectations for that.
We had very high expectations for it. I don't think they made money on it, but they... Well, towards the end, it was sort of, well, we lost less money on this one than on these other titles, so it's a good title.
Hi, Bunny Renmei.
God, I love that show.
It was a great show.
Great show.
It did better than they expected, but I don't think it ultimately made money. But also, we went out of business before they had a chance to go their full contract run.
Right. Okay, here's an easy one. Ikitosun. I assume it did.
It made money.
Yeah.
People are still...
Mao-chan.
Bong!
Yes! Hated that show.
Everyone hated that show. That show was a piece of shit.
My little girls loved it.
Now, I remember that came out, and I just ripped it apart in a review, because obviously it's not for me.
Right.
But I remember questioning at the time, because you guys packaged it with like a lunchbox and like an alarm clock and shit or something like that?
That was the sales solicitation kit, yes.
Right.
To make a certain VP happy, you made expensive things to send it out to retailers. Retailers would see the expensive thing and say, oh, this is going to be a good title, so we'll buy it. And then later they'd send you the crap that didn't sell back.
Master Keaton.
Oh, yeah. it did horribly.
I wish our listeners could see the pained look on his face.
Well, you know, again, we're dealing with primarily teen to college age audience of anime fans. And this is a show... for salarymen.
Right.
Mermaid Forest.
Meh. I think we spent too much on the contract. It did okay. But it did a lot better than Rumiko Takahashi Anthology.
It sounds like that was the one, like the bomb. Yeah. Paranoia Agent.
Did well.
I would hope but so. That's
never made money.
Yeah. Of course not. Sherlock Hound. I forgot you guys released that.
It did okay.
Really?
Wow. But it didn't come close to making money.
Dog of Flanders movie.
Dog of Flanders movie.
The hack and slash.
You know what?
The Robert Loggia cut.
Target made us break even.
Wow. That was back when Target was messing with anime.
And they would buy it because it was Christmas themed.
Right.
So
it was?
Well, you know, kind of.
You could make it look like that in the cover.
The kid died in a snowbank.
He died in Christmas.
Right. Oh, that's right.
On Christmas Day, I think. I haven't seen it in a while.
Sakura Wars the movie. You guys did a pretty big push for that.
No. Bomb.
You put it out in theaters, right?
Yeah.
Cat Labor Wasted 13.
Bomb. Okay, both of these titles... if we hadn't put it out in the theater, they probably would have done half as many sales. But by putting it out in the theater, we guaranteed we'd lose money.
That was expensive back then, because that predated digital.
Yeah.
Submarine 707R.
Mega bomb! Again, like Tetsujin 28, that was a nostalgia plot.
I don't think there's ever been a single Japanese military anime that's done well here.
I don't know.
Because at CPM we had Silent Service, which looked exactly like Zipong, and that tanked.
I think it's the same creator.
I think so, yeah.
But both of them bombed. And you know what? You guys had your Silent Service 5 years before we had Zipang. They should have been able to make a comparison.
Wow. Okay, last two. Ultramaniac.
I think that one did okay, but I know that it never broke even, but it wasn't a huge loss. Mm.
And this was at the end of the run, obviously, When They Cry.
I think we only got one volume out, two? Right.
How did those do?
I don't think they did very well, because right about that time, people were starting to realize we had issues. Mm. So we announced that we were going to go out of business, and so suddenly retailers didn't want to buy from us.
Right.
Neither did consumers, if they were smart. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it. Thank you so much. That was very enlightening and probably
thoroughly depressing.
Probably the most informative show we've done.
Yeah.
I hope people find it interesting.
Oh, they will.
People will be combing this apart for a while.
This is catnip for industry wonks.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get some hate mail sooner or later.
Well, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. And yeah, all right. Okay, we will see you all next week.